And so conceptualizing things in terms of networks and network effects and thinking about how you can think laterally and in all kinds of different ways, not just linearly, was really helpful and made me really like blockchain. And then from like a humanities perspective, I love the ideology behind it, and there's a bit of a spectrum there, and I think maybe a continuum of how much people see it as an ideology versus just a really useful application of technology. But I love the idea that people want to organize themselves differently, that they want to interact differently, that they want to, you know, potentially cut out middlemen that have been making money off of them for ages.
That is Kaya Maya Stewart, and this is episode 21 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Bellotti and today's guest is Kaya Maya Stewart. Kaya is a product manager at Pegasus, the protocol engineering group at Consensus. She has worked in emerging technology for nearly 6 years, including her first blockchain use case for supply chain in 2016. Originally from Canada, Kaya lives in Melbourne, where she co-organizes the local chapter of Women in Blockchain. She is also the entrepreneur in residence at Start West, where she provides mentorship and consulting to startup founders in emerging tech. Let's get to know Kaya. I think we're good to go.
Cool.
Hi, Kaya.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Pretty good. Enjoying Sydney. Bit sweaty.
Well, how cold is it in Melbourne now?
Oh, I can't decide. It's like 15 degrees, 20 degrees, 5 degrees.
That's Melbourne, though.
Yeah.
Melbourne. Yeah, it took me a long time to learn how to not say the R in Melbourne.
Yeah, I try. Well, at least I don't say Melbourne, but still say Melbourne because I feel like I'm pretending to have an Australian accent if I say Melbourne.
Oh, that's interesting. Where are you from?
From Canada, originally.
Ooh, where in Canada?
Calgary, Alberta, if you've heard of it. Pretty cold place.
I've heard of Alberta, yes.
Rocky Mountains, oil. That's it.
I have a couple of friends that live there.
Ah.
Yeah, lots of snow.
Yeah, it's pretty cold. But similar to Melbourne in that, I was just telling my Uber driver, actually, that it will be really, really cold, like minus 30, and then it'll be like plus 15 for a week because we have warm winds coming in from the foothills where I live, and then it's minus 30 again. So I'm used to changing weather and expectations.
That's good.
Yep.
I guess that's in the mindset of a lot of Canadians.
Yeah, and a lot of blockchain enthusiasts, I feel like, are the flexible, ready for anything, agile people.
Canada has a pretty big blockchain community.
Yeah, Vitalik started in Toronto, and yeah, it's just cool to read and now meet some of those community members. The founder of Pegasus, which is the company I work for, his name is Shahan. He works out of Toronto and is amazing, so I'm learning a lot about how I should have maybe started in Canada, but didn't.
sometimes, you know, life takes different turns. But we all end up in the place where we're meant to be, I think.
Definitely.
So let's talk about how you started your career.
Okay. I feel like everyone has like a really weird, interesting story when it comes to how they got into this field in particular. Mine is sort of weird. I finished my degree in psychology, but I was specializing in neuroscience research. I did artificial neural networks for the first couple years of my research, sort of career, but it was pretty limited. And then I did cognition, and then I wanted to do my master's somewhere, but I took a year off and came to Australia, loved it, decided to move here, and then tried to apply for master's, got in, but then like it was too expensive. Then I tried to apply for jobs in research, but I couldn't get one because of my visa. So the only job I could get at first was working at Kathmandu, which was awesome. Got paid really well.
Okay.
Thought I was going to be rich. Then it was like $25 an hour. But then I got a job at this really small startup, and they were the only ones that would hire me on my visa, which was a working holiday visa. And they were developing software and wanted me to just fill in gaps and whatever. And it ended up scaling up really quickly, long story short, and we started building supply chain due diligence software and had a blockchain use case that I was product managing on all of a sudden, and had to very quickly learn what blockchain actually was so I could explain it to stakeholders. And then I became obsessed with it. And then I met Rosa, who is an amazing community builder in Melbourne, now lives in Sydney, as you know. And yeah. Yeah, just kept on engaging with the community and eventually started talking to Consensus and Pegasus, which is the protocol engineering team at Consensus. And eventually I bothered them so much they gave me a job.
Okay. So how does psychology and what you studied fit into your current role? Because, I mean, there's a lot to be said about behavior and how these things work, right?
Definitely.
What was the what piqued your interest?
I think it's multifaceted in the sense that I've always struggled to choose between science and humanities or arts. And I guess this is a great intersection of both. Like, I did psychology, I did a BA, but I specialized in really scientific, well, not that psychology is scientific, but I specialized in highly sort of biological science, neuroscience focused stuff. So my artificial neural networks work was aligned to AI and sort of emerging tech. And so conceptualizing things in terms of networks and network effects and thinking about how you can think laterally and in all kinds of different ways, not just linearly, was really helpful and made me really like blockchain. And then from like a humanities perspective, I love the ideology behind it, and there's a bit of a spectrum there, and I think maybe a continuum of how much people see it as an ideology versus just a really useful application of technology. But I love the idea that people want to organize themselves differently, that they want to interact differently, that they want to, you know, potentially cut out middlemen that have been making money off of them for ages. But whatever your reasoning, like, it comes down to, I guess, mobilizing communities differently. And that's really cool from a psychology perspective, too. So
that is indeed.
Yeah.
How does that play a part in the work that you're currently doing?
Oh, good question. So the work we're currently doing is specifically Pegasus builds an open source Java client, which is now called Hyperledger Besu, because we joined the Hyperledger Foundation recently.
Okay.
It was called Pantheon. And it's for enterprise, which is an interesting place to be, because open source and enterprise, that's an interesting combination. Also, potentially some people who have the ideology of disruption of the current system may see that as being a really counterintuitive place to be, because why would companies want to adopt a technology that some people see existing to disrupt them? But from my perspective, I think it's about getting early adopters and maybe changing the way that industries and enterprises want to organize themselves because they see a different alternative, because they want to do the right thing like all humans do, and enabling that process through open source software, sharing, community, and engagement of those people rather than sort of isolation of those people is a really great, I think, location for me to try and do something. And so I want that seat at that table, and I think that I'm in the perfect place right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think people try to divide and contain themselves into these silos of, I like only this, therefore I don't want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And everybody can talk to each other while liking different things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a problem that we are facing in this space now that I think we need to work at it so we can make it better for everyone.
Definitely.
And yes, enterprise and open source doesn't seem like a really good combination, but open source developers still need to get paid somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's true. And yeah, and it's not, I should correct myself, because like Microsoft and others have had, there's open source enterprise stuff that exists and communities that exist already. And so I guess we're playing into that as well. And I just realized too that specifically my job at Pegasus is as a product owner. So I see that as being like the translator of information. I'm advocating for the devs when they're not in the room, but I'm also advocating for the end user or the customer or the strategy and ops team. Or every person that's not in the room, essentially, to make decisions about where a product goes and what it looks like and how it enables and empowers people. So I think, yeah, putting all of that together and then adding the enterprise component, which has already been leveraged and works for many people, is kind of the way that I see a lot of adoption taking off. Because it's slow. You know it's slow. Like, it feels like,
of course it's
we've
slow.
Known about it forever. And it's like, why don't people love this? But maybe we're too obsessed with how it all works and we just need to make it accessible to people in whatever way, meet them where they're at kind of thing.
And it's, you know, 10 years for Bitcoin, 5 years for Ethereum. That's not a lot of time.
True.
And plus, there's everything else. There's a whole soup of blockchains out there. And there's always a new one. And, you know, people trying to make something work, which is interesting because everybody's trying to solve a problem with a different solution.
Mm.
Do we know which ones are going to work? Not yet, because it's just been 5 years.
That's a good point. Sometimes it does feel like we're a hammer looking for nails, but because blockchain was such a cool, new, hip, and snazzy sort of buzzword for a while, that now I think with crypto winter and all of that stuff, which I've never really been too engaged on the actual trading of crypto side. I've always kind of thought about, you know, use cases like supply chain. And after that kind of crash happened, there were a lot of experts, and I say that with quotations, who wanted to trade and wanted to sort of live in that crypto world, but leverage it to do business as usual, that I think are no longer involved in this process. And then now I feel like it's the people who are settling into really finding the right use cases, what works, and then innovating until we get to a place where blockchain can solve those problems. And that's an exciting, different place to be. I'm excited to be here now in particular.
And, okay, what do you think would happen if in, let's say, 10 years' time, we realize that there's nothing to blockchain but crypto or Bitcoin?
Then at least we tried. Yeah, I think that's fair enough to admit that, you know, maybe, especially with technology evolving as quickly as it is, it'll be a dud, and that's okay. And again, like, just being there and trying to see if there's a way that we can make this work for basically a disruption of the way that humans engage in culture in general, because that is what this would mean for the world. If that can be done positively and it go beyond sort of borderless economies and crypto, great. If not, I'm really happy with the crypto scenario too. Even if it's Bitcoin, yeah, I was reading an article today about how Bitcoin is just like the only one that's doing well or means anything right now, with Ethereum kind of in second place and then nothing. And I just don't know enough about that world to really pay attention, and I really should. But I don't know.
Bitcoin is fascinating.
Are you a Bitcoin expert? Are we going to talk about that?
Well, not on this episode, but we can talk about that. You know, you should come to Bitcoin Sydney sometimes.
I'm sure
there are good Bitcoin meetups in Melbourne.
I'm sure there are, and I really should pay more attention. Yeah, in Melbourne. I'm sure that we should, maybe we should partner with them, because I also co-organize Women in Blockchain with Karen Cohen, who is awesome. And she does a lot of community work in Melbourne, and we are always looking for different perspectives. And I think that she just had a debate a couple days ago or a week ago around, like, will it be Bitcoin or blockchain? And I'm always like, well, Bitcoin is a blockchain use case, so what do you mean? But I think I get that it's more just, do we use it for one thing and it does that thing well, and then we forget about the rest? Or do we use the technology to leverage cool things that we don't understand fully yet? So I think she's really already engaging that topic of conversation, but I keep missing those really interesting nights, so I'm not learning anything.
There's a really good book called The Bitcoin Standard, which I totally recommend you have a look at, because it talks not just about Bitcoin, but how money got to exist. So the fundamentals of money, which is a very interesting problem to tackle. Like, money has not been this static thing that we know now. Through time, it has changed and evolved, and perhaps this is a new evolution, because we've seen that having fiat currencies are not helping anyone anywhere. But I digress.
No, that's so true, and it's fascinating. Especially because there are still, I can think of a lot of places that I've been in the world where, yes, money, like, there is a currency, but there are lots of other forms of currency that are tokenized. You know, for example, trading things like cigarettes or things like betel nut, or just tons of different phone cards and stuff like that. And I think that's such an important thing to consider, is humans do adapt to new ways of interacting and transacting with each other. It's not that hard. We've done it before. And we really are creating more of a community sort of, I don't know, actually, maybe I would describe it as us doing what we used to do when we lived in smaller communities, but at scale, where we want to have peer-to-peer interactions. And so it's not that different from the past.
And it's not that different from our past, because Andreas Antonopoulos, he has this interesting talk where he talks about how kids in school, they have their own forms of currency. They trade lollies, they trade, you know, little cars, they trade everything. So when we are very young, we come from this ideal that anything can be a currency, and then we are put in this box where we are taught to think that no, just this, you know, government control thing is what you should use as currency, but hey, let's take the control back and see how this will evolve.
Let's teach all the kids blockchain, because they'll get it. They probably do get it more than, like, if you explain it with the right level of complexity.
The Gen Alpha is an organization that works with kids born after 2010, teaching them concepts that are going to impact their future. They did a workshop at UNSW, I think last year or the year before, where they had kids in the, you know, the lawn, and they had lollies. They had the kids swapping lollies with each other, where they would get, I'll give you three lollies, and that's it. And then they had the kids swap lollies through their parents, so they would give their mom like three lollies, and then the other kid would get two lollies. So that's how you explain the concept of a middleman to a kid, because you see, now the lolly is going through somebody else and I'm getting less lollies.
Oh my gosh, and there's nothing more unfair than your parents taking candy away from you.
Exactly.
So smart, I love that. In fact, so, I could probably explain it that way to adults.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a universal thing. We don't like when something's taken away so that we can, like, if there's a way around it, we want to find it. I love it.
That's it.
That's so cool.
So how do you go from psychology to technology? Did you have to just, like, dive down and learn a whole bunch of new things? Did you do any special, educational courses or anything in the process?
That's a question I get a lot. And I think people don't realize how similar kind of the neuroscience stuff I was doing was, in the sense that I was working with programs like Mathematica or MATLAB, and so had a basic understanding of different programming languages, but also how things fit together in a virtual environment, and that was really helpful. So when I started at this small startup, it was four of us in the back of a room, and I was just doing like communications, content, whatever. But what I found a real passion for was helping, like, design and put together software for different stakeholders, taking into account their different points of view. And then I realized, like, okay, there must be a name for whatever I'm doing. Looked it up, was like, software product manager, that's my thing. Went to my boss and was like, please, can I do a 6-month specialization course on Coursera through the University of Alberta, of all things, because I'm from Alberta, so great. And he was like, yep, go ahead, because at this point we were a lot bigger and we needed that person to be skilled. So I did that and essentially just kept learning and iterating really quickly, spent a lot of sleepless nights looking into how to do things. And when you work in a startup environment, it's very conducive to a world like blockchain, because there's no certainty. You're learning, you have to be all of the hats all of the time, and you just get really resourceful. And so, yeah, I think I just evolved. And I'm still evolving every single day, and I'm still out of my depth all day, every day. But it's cool.
That's how you progress. That's, you know, there's no progress if you're just doing the same thing every day, right?
True.
And there's no better thing, and I've only found out that when I left the corporate world to work in the startup world, that there's nothing better than being unboxed and doing lots of different things.
Unboxed. That's a great term. I'm going to steal it.
Feel free.
That's great. Because I think if I tried to go back into sort of a world where I had a job description and people said things like, that's not in your remit, I would be like, why not? But I'm good at it. I want it to be in my remit. And just that flexibility of finding your path and then kind of going a certain way because it fits, and then maybe going a different way because that now fits, has just been how I've navigated the workplace. And I love that the workplace is kind of set up that way now for a lot of people graduating university, which can be scary if you thought you were going to do it. Like, I thought I was going to be a clinical psychologist or a neuropsychologist. Nope. But there are lots of other things I can do that didn't exist in my mind when I was boxed in university. And I think, yeah, that's such an exciting place to be. There's so much innovation that's still to come. So
innovation still to come.
Put it on my gravestone.
So, have you encountered a lot of people in your work environment that do not understand blockchain, and how do you try and talk to them about it?
I used to, but now I work with engineers who know way too much about the protocol layer, and I'm still so out of my depth.
Oh, but you still in events all the time.
Oh, for sure. That's true. That's a great point. I think, yeah, the community outreach piece, I'm becoming a lot more of a person that can speak to the technical side of things. So I find myself falling into the bad habits that a lot of people on the engineering team have. Love them, but often you're so deep into it that you start explaining things at way too, you know, technical a level. Because sometimes you just need to start with, what if you were, you know, a kid with three candies and you're giving your parent one of the candies,
yep,
you know, to swap with someone? That seems unfair. Let's disrupt that. Or even just thinking about, I've used a couple of analogies about like blockchain being a new infrastructure in technology, where you just move things around to different places instead of storing them all in one place. And everybody kind of paves the road together. And everyone's house is kind of a storage and processing center, rather than having one big vulnerable place doing that. But I'm always searching for more accessible ways to explain at events what it is, because I think a lot of the time you just forget that you are already way too down the rabbit hole when you're saying like, okay, so consensus mechanisms, let's talk about proof of authority. That's what I work on. Like, just don't even go there if you're at an event where it's like, let's see what blockchain is, because then you're shutting people out of the conversation and making them afraid to ask questions. And like, I feel like I ask stupid questions all the time. And my boss, who's amazing, Rob Dawson at Pegasus, he once said, when I prefaced something with, this is probably a silly question, he just said, Kaya, stop right there. It's a question, not a silly question. And that has stuck with me, because that's what I want people to feel like if they don't know what blockchain is, but they want to get involved. And we need them, and we need people everywhere in every realm, not just technical, quote-unquote, people. So, yeah.
And that's how you got involved in community?
Yes. Wanting to, like, get out there and get all the right people in the right spots, because we need governance, we need, you know, lawyers, we need product managers like myself that have kind of a generalist perspective and can think at more of a, I don't know, an overarching, I don't know, level, for lack of a better term. And also we just need people that are interested in it and want to use it. And then we need to know how they want to use it. Like, do people actually care how it works? Or are we just so obsessed with it because we're told that it's cool? And maybe we should just stop focusing on that. I don't know. Do we want to be more engaged and, like, put the effort in to figuring out how it all works? Or do we want to use it as a tool? And, like, that's part of it, too, is with my product hat on, my product owner hat, I'm going around being like, okay, so what do you actually want to know about blockchain? What do you care about? If it looked like this, would you use it? Do you want to contribute to it? And collecting those requirements and information and insights is a huge part of, so it's selfish, basically.
But it's interesting.
Yeah. But to, like, ultimately, so that communities feel like they can come to the table and sit with me, because there's not that many of us there, and we want more people. Particularly, we want to include people that are, you know, usually not at the table. And that's all kinds of different people that look different, think differently, and that diversity is what's going to make this, hopefully, the killer solution for all things, and it'll solve world peace. Just kidding. But that's what it sounded like before, when people were talking about it before crypto winter.
Blockchain and peace.
Could be.
The Bitcoiners usually say that Bitcoin is the thing that will ultimately bring peace to the world.
Really?
Yes.
Can you? I know I'm not supposed to ask you questions, but can you speak to that insight?
Well, if in a world where there's one currency that is so valuable that just by owning a little bit of it, you're better off, and governments are not fighting with each other all the time, that might be the thing that bring peace to Earth.
Yeah. That's cool to think about.
That was a very simplified view.
Yeah, but that's where you got to start, because I, again, have that, like, that is exactly meeting me where I'm at with probably that perspective. So I'll go look into it and read that book you suggested as well. because I think that it's worth knowing all of the perspectives, and I'm so keen to hear what people think will happen and how, you know, we can all sort of share, because there's nothing that has ever happened to me that was bad when I opened up and shared a perspective, even if it was, you know, not the norm or it was challenged. I think that's probably where I've learned the most, and yeah.
I think it's the inequality problem that where so little people have so much of the world's wealth,
mm-hmm.
and then most of the people have next to no wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a problem that has arisen? That came to be.
Okay, yeah.
In the past 40, 50 years,
mm-hmm.
You know, we had some inequality before, but not this much. Plus, the population has been growing so much.
Right.
How do we deal with these issues?
Yeah. And that's part of, like, the distributed, because people get stuck on the decentralized part, and it's like, that's the biggest buzzword related to blockchain, but a huge part is distributed, so meaning everybody gets a piece. And I agree, like, I think we have to be careful, and this is where I think my position with enterprise is so interesting, because with a capitalist framework, and that's the box we live in now, that is kind of a tenet of capitalism. For it to work, there needs to be a lie in which people buy into that is like, okay, well, if you just work as hard as those people, you'll eventually get there to the top. And like, maybe some people do, most people will not, but if you all did, capitalism as a system and like a framework just wouldn't work. So kind of creating this, like, yeah, new, I guess, system, and that's where the ideology piece comes in, I notice, and it's very interesting to explore, and I think there's so much complexity there, but it's a good place to start by having a conversation and like hearing those views about, let's give everyone a piece of the same thing that we all value. Good idea. Because also it's mutable, and governments can't decide that they want to like basically disempower their people and cause a massive devaluing of the currency, or, you know, be corrupt and keep it all in one place or things like that. So that's great. I'll learn more about Bitcoin.
So how do you, or do you have any advice for the people coming out of university, seeing all this talk about blockchain and going, okay, should I meddle in that? How do I learn more?
Mm. I would say you should definitely get involved. Come talk to me. Find me on LinkedIn. But there's so many resources, and if you're interested in that technology, even if you just like the idea from like a social sciences perspective, there's like RMIT Hub in Melbourne has a whole social sciences lab. They do micro-credentialing that you can do, so just like bite-sized kind of pieces that you get a certificate for, and you can kind of upskill that way. I think a lot of industry outreach programs or initiatives within universities are getting better at engaging with blockchain, so hopefully you'll have already hit it at some point if that's your interest, but get involved in the meetups that we have, Women in Blockchain Sydney, ETH Sydney, Women in Blockchain Melbourne, all at Web3. There's tons of, apparently Bitcoin, which I will look up. There's tons of really great community outreach things happening, and lots of ways to learn. The Blockchain Center in Melbourne is great as well. I would say come ask people that are not scary and willing to sit and explain it to you, and not think any question is silly, and then do that for other people, and we'll just keep doing that until everyone feels comfortable.
Great advice.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. This was awesome. I really appreciate it.
Me too. Yay.
Yay.
And that was the lovely Kaya Meyer Stewart. I hope you enjoyed getting to know Kaya and her journey from neuroscience to product management. To get in touch with her, please reach out on Twitter at MeyersKaya. You can also reach out on LinkedIn, just search for her name or click on the show notes link. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll see you at the next blog. Bye!